702, The World View
with Adam Gilchrist.
All right, The World View with Adam Gilchrist is brought to you by Satrix. Invest in global funds. Invest with Satrix. Adam Gilchrist, a very good morning to you. We've just, of course, extended our, we're calling it a national state of disaster in France. It's now a state of emergency, all due to COVID-19.
I have to say, disaster sounds worse than emergency, doesn't it? But it's the same thing, essentially. But yeah, they've got nighttime curfews in France. And as far as anyone can tell, I tried a bit of research on this and didn't get very far. But I think the last time the French had nighttime curfews was when the Nazis were there in the 1940s. So Paris and eight other cities, people are being told don't go out between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. Of course, it's all in an effort to try to curb the second wave of coronavirus. The Czech Republic has shut schools and bars. Dutch cafes and restaurants are closing. I think the Czech Republic's doing it for a month as well. In fact, in Northern Ireland, they're doing likewise, a month from tomorrow for pubs and restaurants with all sorts of new restrictions. Spain's Catalonia region is again seeing bars and restaurants close down for 15 days. Everyone seems to be doing it on different timescales. And yet we're told this is all based on the scientific evidence. Well, how come everyone's doing things differently on different timescales? And I quite like the poster ad campaign, because Germany's had a bit of as has the UK and a few others, they've had some anti-mask wearing protests. So now there's an anti-mask wearing protest ad campaign, an ad campaign, therefore, to persuade people they should wear masks. Picture of an elderly lady on Berlin's tourism board poster with her middle finger raised, which I think is quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, look, for us, it sounds worse, but our state of disaster is just slightly less serious than a state of emergency. But many countries now are taking this seriously because they have to. Tell us about these lockdown parties. This is extraordinary, right? Three different British cities, super spreader events, I imagine.
Well, potentially, I suppose, although there is that thing, isn't there, about young adults being less likely to contract it, less likely to get it badly. And it's very tricky if you know that your pubs and restaurants and bars are going to close, and that'll be that for 2 weeks. You tend to try to make the most of it while they're still open. Lo and behold, that's what people did in Liverpool, although maybe they went a bit too far, dancing in the streets after the 10 p.m. curfew. The mayor said people had shamed the city of Liverpool, which I'm not sure. Maybe that's going too far. I mean, for instance, as I mentioned, in Northern Ireland, their pubs, etc., are closing from tomorrow. So what do you think? Thursday night in Belfast tonight? I'm thinking we should start at the Duke of York, then go to Kelly's Cellars and finish at the famous Dirty Onion pub. I think that would be the way of coping with it in Belfast. But also, in Northern England, there's now set to be a Scottish invasion, because one of the great matches in the world for rivalry, Celtic versus Rangers. It's the first derby match of the season, as far as the old firm goes in Glasgow, on Saturday. But the whole of the central belt of Scotland has got closed bars. Obviously, there won't be any fans at the match itself. So many fans are thinking we'll head to the big screens in Blackpool in England and have a party time there. And England has its own restrictions, just not as tight as Scotland. So it's all getting a bit mixed up and a bit confusing, frankly.
Look, I get why. I get why they would say they've shamed the city, because, of course, we know that young people or healthier people are less likely, even if they do contract this virus, to be harmed by it. But as we know, it also does mean that even if they are asymptomatic, they can still be spreaders to those who are vulnerable. And I think that's where maybe the strong language comes from, Adam. Mr. and Mrs. Elton John. I mean, I know he was married at a point. What's this case about?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, obviously, people tend to know that Sir Elton John has a partner, David Furnish, and a longtime partner. And, you know, they've been very happy, and they duly got married when the laws changed. But I don't think many people under the age of 40 would know that Sir Elton John once had a wife, Renata Blowell.
Yes.
An Australian sound engineer. They met in 1983, married in 1984, divorced in 1988, as Elton struggled with his sexuality, drugs, and alcohol. This is catalogued a little bit, not overly, I would say, but in his memoir and in the film Rocket Man. Well, because of that, Renata has come back and said, hang on a moment, we agreed in our divorce deal we would never discuss our relationship or the reasons for separation or any of that. And frankly, I've said about as much as Rocket Man and the singer's memoir actually say, but still, she sued Sir Elton and out of court has settled, we think, for about $4 million and have agreed again, neither will ever talk about their marriage, reasons for separation, divorce, etc. Do you know what? For $4 million, I will stay shtum about that whole episode as well. How about you? I think you'd do it for $4 million, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, quite apart, of course, from their relationship, because I read that memoir, and my understanding was that although, of course, they went their separate ways, they remained amicable in terms of their dealings
friendly-ish,
with each other. Yeah.
Yes.
This certainly will make it a little bit trickier, I suppose, going forward. Don't go breaking my heart, indeed. Thank you, Adam Gilchrist.
I'm still standing.
Imagine your annual